On a brand new Josh Nason's Punch-Out, the boys are back. That's right. Jack Encarnacion, JP Sorrow, the Laps fan, has returned. And they're talking about their upcoming live event during WrestleMania weekend. Biceps, brunch, bozos, and bullshit. In that order. Maybe out of that order. I don't know. But coming up in just a couple weeks during WrestleMania weekend. So we talk all about that event, what to expect, how you could win an authentic Terry Funk branding iron. Talk about that story, what they learned from last year's live show, what they didn't learn from last year's live show, Vince McMahon impersonations in this era of Vince going through this Janelle Grant lawsuit, and all kinds of other stuff as well. This is a really fun conversation, as you might expect. So if you're a fan of the Laps fan, you're going to love this. If you're not a fan of the Laps fan, you're still going to love this. So let's get right to it. Myself, Jack Encarnacion, JP Sorrow, the Laps fan, talking all about bozos, biceps, and bullshit brunch coming up in Philadelphia. Let's get right to it right now on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Well, there's WrestleMania season, as I've been told, and because of that, there's all types of events happening around WrestleMania weekend. Of course, WrestleMania taking place, according to the internet, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in just a few weeks, and very excited to welcome back. You know, this is probably the biggest show of the weekend, I would say. The Laps fan returning to do a live show, I believe the second live show in their history. And if not, they will yell at me and prove me wrong. But the Laps fan returns to Punchline, or debuts rather, Punchline in Philly, Sunday, April 7th at noontime, not at night, noontime. We'll get into that. Again, how you can buy tickets, comedy, and all types of other things. Of course, this is a little bit of a different title than last time because it's full of things that I talked to Dave Meltzer this morning. He did confirm this is the case. There will be bozos there. There will be biceps. He could not confirm bullshit, but he could confirm brunch. It was a very strange text he sent back to me. But yes, the Laps fans, bozos, biceps, and bullshit brunch. Jack Encarnacion, JP Sorrow, welcome back, Josh Nason's Punch-Out.
Thank you, man.
Hey, you know, it's funny, actually. I can guarantee we'll have bozos. I can definitely guarantee we'll have bullshit. I don't know if we'll have biceps. I don't know if our audience has that, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
It'll be a good challenge.
That's the X factor. But of course, that being a callback to the old bacon biceps and bagels brunch that WWF used to do on WrestleMania weekend back when, you know, people actually kind of believed in wrestling and they had Hasbros and everything was right with the world. They would have the little, you know, the Sunday brunch. They even shot an angle at WrestleMania 9 where Lex Luger hit Brett with the loaded forearm to make an excuse for why he'd lose to Yoko for that exclusive brunch crowd. So it's been an eventful thing over the years. From what I understand, it's something the New Day tried to resurrect because they had warm memories about it like we do and were summarily denied by WWE the opportunity to create a brunch event around WrestleMania. But we'll step right in, and Punchline Philly will have vittles and food for people, and we're going to take the stage and lay down the truth.
So Lex Luger and Brett had to discuss an angle in which Lex was hit with a loaded bagel. Did I hear that correctly? Is that for that part of it? Then it discusses, we have to do an angle at a brunch.
I definitely know that there were a few loaded bagels that hit Luger's gut that morning. I don't know.
I think Josh is getting Luger confused with Yokozuna, who certainly had a few confrontations with loaded bagels that weekend, not to mention turkey anus and dipped in grease and mayonnaise.
Also bacon as well. Like no biceps on Yokozuna though.
All right, so let's talk about this. We have actually a lot to get into with some other events that have happened since we last spoke. So all right, so last year when we talked, I was reviewing the videotape, so to speak, even though it wasn't videotape. You did a 11 o'clock show at night. Yeah. And we talked about bringing mattresses to the show because people are just going to be exhausted. And really, you're just providing a refuge for people to relax and sleep after a long WrestleMania weekend and perhaps hear some comedy. This time, you're forcing the universe to get up early for them. And it'll be a noontime show. Of course, doors open 11. So, talk to me about kind of why the shift to during the day.
Well, it's really just, circumstance. Last year, that was what we could get. That was a club that was willing to have us on the weekend, and it made sense to us to do something where we could sort of wrap up WrestleMania as opposed to, the Thursday before. It's like everyone's like not really talking about WrestleMania because it's not really frontline, top of mind. But if you do it within the weekend, be it after the Sunday show or in this case after the Saturday show, I feel like you can sort of plug into what will be the enduring dialogue around the event years from now. We will have commented on things that people don't just totally forget once WrestleMania happens and is over. But really, it wasn't that strategic. In this case, we would have loved to have been in a more hospitable hour last year too, but it just venue availability wise, there wasn't a ton to choose from. So we made the post show happen with LA traffic. We had all kinds of anxiety about that. It turned out beautifully. No one gave a fuck about traffic, and we had a great turnout. And
And it
this
worked out
year,
okay too, because it was, with the time change, because it was California, so 3 hours prior to the East Coast. So it was earlier than, when WrestleMania this year will be ending for us. So it definitely that helped kind of make it work better for us and be able to do a post show.
and this is much closer to the venue too than last year, where we had to, folks had to make like a 35-minute drive.
Gotcha. How close is it to the stadium?
It's a good question. I think it's like a 12-minute car ride or something like that, from what I've heard. I mean,
Gotcha.
who knows with traffic on the day, but it's definitely doable.
And so I will say, and I was reading through the event listing here, and in typical Laps fan fashion, you've kept your fans guessing. So doors open at 11 a.m. 2 drink minimum required per person. Of course, 21 plus. So if you're under 21, secure a fake ID. I think that's what everyone would recommend.
Brother.
However, you down below it says our callback bar and patio, weather depending, open at 5 p.m. on show days. So the last fans have to buy drinks, but they don't know if the bar is going to be open. So it's just this big puzzle back and forth of
Oh,
what's going to happen.
now I know why Flair did an RSVP.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean that's all venue rules. That's all sort of boilerplate language, so whatever, read into that whatever you will. What matters is we're going to be up there penetrating, basically.
Yes. Tell me about the foods. So it says there's going to be food there because this is a brunch. I assume, hopefully loaded bagels of some sort. Tell
Again.
me about the food selection. And did you two, fly out to sample it in Philadelphia at like a wedding, or how did this work?
It's funny. Now we're going to see the venue for the first time, I think, when everybody else does, or at least on the weekend, and it's up to them what to serve. I mean, it's sort of like the that's not our department. I mean, yeah, would we have liked to have picked the menu, of course, but that's not really how it
I would have
works.
liked to have had bagels, bacon, and biceps on the menu. That would have
Yeah.
been
I don't know where we get the biceps from, but it's just it struck us as an opportunity to call back to those brunches without any fucking idea what we're serving people. I mean, we can't just as well walk in with our own catering and set up shop and kind of cut in on the kitchen's action. So we'll let them take care of it. Hopefully you like the food. If not, keep it to yourself.
Or just, F off. Fine too.
So let's talk about the comedians lineup. And JP, if you want to start with this and kick it over to Jack, his other thoughts. How'd you come out securing the lineup for this year?
Well, that's our boy Ray Goots. Honest to God, he is a superstar. He's a New York-based stand-up comedian, and he was the one who actually reached out. This is what is always so fascinating to both Jack and myself, is that stuff like this is never our idea. It's never our idea. Like, we kind of have, yeah, oh, it'd be fun to do a live show, but it's like, oh, like, who wants the hassle of having to like set that up on your own and pull this together? And then all of a sudden, Ray, who's a regular listener of ours, and he comes over and he says, "Hey, you know what? Let's do a live show in LA." And we're like, "Okay, look, if you set it up, if you get the
Right.
venue and set everything up and do all that hard work, we're there. If all we have to do is come out there and look like jerks and spout truth and knowledge and all the deep things that wrestling fans don't want to talk about, then we're there." And he did. He did it, and it was absolutely tremendous. And he pulled together a great list of comedians last year, and he did the same this year. He did the he was like, let's do it again. And we're like, okay, listen, same deal as last time. You set it up, you do all the hard work, and we will gladly come in and take all the credit.
The way it should be.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I mean, you're going to draw on our backs, right?
That's right.
But no, it's a great lineup. Yeah. And so it's a situation where last year he kind of had to put up the bat signal because he wanted to do like a wrestling themed comedy event on WrestleMania weekend. There's a lot of these types of things. He's got grander ambitions though, and has kind of like a manager streak to him that really helps in situations like this. But last year he was trying to line something up and then it fell through. And then his sort of plan, his go to market plan kind of got messed up where he needed somebody he knew could put asses in seats. And you better believe our fucking phone rings when that happens.
Damn right.
And it happened again this year, and forever may it continue.
So the lineup this year: Ray Gutz, Dave Pienkowski, Scott Chaplin, Ryan Shaner, and Lamar Lee. And so, for those people that did not go last year, or kind of curious of what, how this works, or what to expect, and all that stuff, you guys kind of describe kind of what it's going to be. I mean, we know about, again, the bozos and the bullshit, and people should wear their cutoff shirts to flex the biceps that they don't have. But other than that, I mean, what should people expect for the show?
I think they should expect an immersive branding experience that leverages several verticals and flywheels to better integrate inventory, deliver on CPMs, etc.
I believe that we will provide a vertical nature of events along with we want to touch base with our customers on their customer journey, kind of do a deep dive into bandwidth and kind of move the needle big data wise and kind of lean in to that to disruptive acronyms and create a solid bottom line.
This concludes the earnings call. But no, I mean, what we do is, because we're among friends, what's great is we already have a really solid idea of who's coming from our listenership. And it's a really great cross section. As we're going up, this is our 10th year of doing Lapsed Fan. And so there's been sort of like pockets of fans that have developed over the years who keep in touch through group texts and Discord chats and all kinds of other methods on our Patreon. And, usually based on geography, we're like, okay, if we do an event here or get together here, we know this group can make it because they're proximate. This group is too far away. They're not going to be there. In this case, everyone's coming. It's like, I can't think of hardly any listeners that have coagulated into a collective that aren't coming. So it's going to be like this cross section.
And the real and what's the, always the kicker, and this happened last year and it's happening again this year, is the amount of people who've emailed us and said, "Hey, I bought tickets, but I'm not going to WrestleMania. I
That's
have
right.
no interest in going to WrestleMania. I'm flying out from wherever I live to see you guys WrestleMania weekend."
Yeah, the Lapsed Fan is, of course, the name of the show. And while to different degrees, JP, much more than myself, in fact, 100% more than myself, are indeed lapsed in terms of, week-to-week wrestling fandom, our audience, they're actually lapsed. Like, if you want to talk about what the Lapsed Fan wants from wrestling, what they're looking for, it's our audience. It's everyone who's going to be in the crowd at Punchline Philly. And please come under the tent because we are the wrestling fan slash friends you've looked for your whole life, a lifetime of being ostracized for liking something where the outcomes are predetermined and no one is actually trying to hurt each other. We understand, we sympathize, we empathize, and we are the community you've been searching for
We
here at
also
TLF.
pulverize as well.
We pulverize. Well, that comes later, but the
Yes.
proof of concept is in.
That's
And
true.
in terms of what, people can expect, we get up there and we're going to chop up WrestleMania night one. We're going to join our friends from stand-up comedy, all of whom are wrestling fans. That's kind of like the first thing we screen for is who follows wrestling. And then from there, are they funny? And we're just going to talk about in sort of like, two at a time, maybe three at a time, however we choose to stagger it. We'll just get up there and say, "Hey, highlight, low light. What did you like? What didn't you like? How is it fair that Rock can say fuck and nobody else can?" That kind of stuff. And then, of course, you're going to get a visit from the rogues gallery of lapsed characters, voiced almost entirely by my esteemed co-host JP.
I get emails from these characters all the time. They're saying, "Please, let I get we got to get in there. We got to get in there. I need my voice heard."
I think
So many beyond the grave too, which is always horrifying when you think about it. But
I know we can expect Fritz there.
I'm sorry.
Of course, with the Iron Claw having been released, lapsed Fritz is going to have a bit to say. And as a matter of fact, Josh, as you well know, and as we were delighted to find through your very podcast, basically the spiritual successor to Fritz von Erich, Holt McCallany, who plays Fritz in the movie, spared no spared no amount of praise when he was on your show for TLF and our lamentable tragedy of world class history series, where we went through the whole kit and caboodle year by year. Yeah. And he acknowledged the truth, as you recall.
There's a particular podcast called Time Lapsed Fan.
That's correct, Holt.
Yes. Time Life Fan. Time Lapsed. Time Life Lapsed Fan.
A Time Life Lapsed Collection.
What a moment in history that was. The minute
I was
he said,
so gassed up when you sent me that clip. Oh my God.
The minute he said it, I had to not laugh because we're doing a Zoom.
Yeah.
Just like, oh my God.
You could see his face.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He was so earnest and serious. And then I just kind of like, I'm like, I cannot wait to share this clip. I put that aside because I still have like 20 minutes left to do the interview. I just wanted to talk about, you know, Time Lapsed Fan and all that.
Oh my God. Jack gave me the clip and I was pacing up and down my house, just like going back and forth. I was so happy and like so excited.
Yeah.
Harder to review the movie, but we pulled it off.
Yeah.
So where did you watch a movie? Did you actually go to the theater to watch a movie, or would you?
Oh yeah. We got together with our friend Tim and all three of us went, at a sort of like a halfway location. And then we went to a dinner afterwards and did a quick review pod of what we thought.
No, coincidentally, the Texas Roadhouse, I believe.
Right. Roadhouse. In Connecticut, but it's
in
close.
Connecticut, but you know, whatever. And I'll tell you, that was the one thing I was like, I was really hoping, and also I've said this too, that I thought he was the best part of the movie.
Well, he was,
and I was really hoping he'd get like get an Oscar nomination and get a win, and then you know up on the
time lapse. So was he, by the way.
Yeah. I just want to thank a particular podcast.
There's a particular podcast.
That's exactly fucking correct.
Exactly. It was. I think the worst part. I'm sure you guys talked about this. The Flair impersonation
was
so dumb. Honestly, all the other wrestlers that they portrayed in there were just, I mean, the guy who played Harley Race too. Like, what was that?
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. He asked me, of course, he's like, well, what'd you think of the film? And I'm like, oh fuck. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I thought there were certain parts, like the Flair thing was just so bad. And then the fact that, you know, Kerry Von Erich, I love that actor, Jeremy Allen White, but it just wasn't believable at all.
No.
It was beautiful too. Like a beautiful movie. It was shot so well. It had such a great quality to it. And it bummed me out that I always said they could use another hour at least.
Yeah.
I was never bored watching it. And I think it could have easily used a third hour, or make it a miniseries, because that's honestly the only way
obviously you
can possibly encompass the amount of what happened to that family. It's got to be a miniseries, but or at least a 3-hour movie. I think they could have done it, but
and like Kevin Nash always says, it's like anything else, right?
It's like anything else.
So if you know, it's impossible to love the movie if you know how much better it could have been.
Oh yeah.
If you don't know how much better it could have been, which I certainly saw those reviews, then have at it, love it, enjoy it, embrace it. But I don't think it got a single nomination. And I think people who were dismissed for just critiquing the movie because they're wrestling nerds have been vindicated.
Hmm. So JP, I need to ask you, because I'm sure you followed the news a little bit over the last year, and Vincent Kennedy McMahon in the news for some dastardly things, as you've heard. Has that changed your... You're very well known for doing the Vince impression. Yeah. Has that changed at all that you've had to, you know, essentially, we knew he's a monster before, but even, you know, more so now, has it changed your opinion on the impression, made any adjustments and so on and so forth?
No, I think it makes it worse. I mean, yeah, I guess there has been a change. I think it makes you want to go worse than that. Cause I mean, all the stuff that especially that has come out more recently, that just absolutely deplorable things. It's like, that's almost stuff that we've been like, there's like a checklist of stuff that we've said. And it's like, oh yeah, he actually did that. Oh yeah, he actually did that. Oh yeah, he actually did that. And it, I mean, we definitely, I would say it's been for a reason Vince has kind of been on the back burner on the show a little bit more recently, but with little appearances here and there. But again, all within good time. But I fully expect that Lapse Events will be back and worse than ever.
I think there's a lot that he has to say. He just hasn't said it yet. Perhaps April 7th is the right day to do that. Perhaps it isn't. I guess it depends if anyone's recording with their cell phones or not. But I will tell you this, Nate Diaz style, if you've been listening to us for 10 years, you ain't surprised, motherfucker. Mm. You ain't surprised. Because in professional wrestling, fiction is closer to truth than what we think to be the shoot side of the business we're exposed to. It's not that, you know, art it's not that art imitates life. It's that it's all art. It's all id. You know, there is no method acting. Well, there is method acting. I should rephrase that.
With them.
No one in wrestling is good enough to hide their true selves when they get on that screen. They're not real actors. And so all those years when we saw Vince's depravity on television in the form of storyline, in the form of, you know, breathing heavily on divas in the nape of their necks, we knew that this was coming from a true place, or at least we felt emboldened enough to go there. And it's very strange to what JP said. You know, people have gone back and looked at our archive and things we've said, what things Lapsed Vince have said over the years. And we've always said it's his inner monologue. We're not imitating Vince's outer monologue. We're imitating his inner monologue, his hopes and dreams, you know, what he sees, what he'd prefer to see in the world as opposed to what the world actually is. And yeah, some of the things people have shot back at us all the way down to defecation is really fucking weird in retrospect that we were saying in the guise of having fun. But now it's not fun. Now it's more of a reality check. Now it's more of like, you need to look at yourself in the mirror as a wrestling fan moment. And people are having a hard time with that. They're having a hard time with reconciling that to really pour your heart and soul into wrestling fandom, it's a very, very specious moral choice. And you should not be surprised when, you know, people in your immediate circle, your friends, your family, talk shit about you behind your back because you like wrestling, because it is full of a lot of really antisocial. It's full of people that could not possibly thrive in any other medium.
Has there been... Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to say, so it has always been a absolutely shocking thing. You know, I'm not trying to say, you know, I'm not trying to say we're better than most in regards to the impressions in terms of maybe the accuracy or whatever, but what it comes down to always is that I always find with other podcasts doing voices, it's more on the lines of they're kind of recollecting what someone has said as opposed to kind of digging in deeper. And it's not intentional that we dig in deeper. It's a lot of times I'll be the first to say it's me trying to make Jack laugh. You know, it's me trying to pop Jack, trying to get him
and vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. That's always been a big part of it. But and also to kind of advance jokes that we've had since we were in college together.
Yeah,
like it's also honestly what it is. It's evolving jokes, and it's just amazing to me when we get tweets, emails, whatever, saying, "Did you hear about this? Did you hear that Vince actually did this? Like, you guys got it again." Vince did this. You guys said it years ago, but Vince did this, you know, like all sorts of things from, I mean, even more recently, besides the sexual stuff, just the Cody Rhodes stuff.
Oh yeah. We called that for StarCast 1. We were on stage StarCast in Chicago 1. And we were in Laps. Vince was up there. Everybody was there. Cody was actually right outside the building, having a cigar party, celebrating All In. And Laps Vince told everyone who was listening, "I will re-sign Cody Rhodes. I will do it." And it's exactly what happened. And so many other things. I mean, it's kind of dizzying to try to remember them all, frankly. But there's something about these live shows to April 7th where Vince really gets on his shit, you know, in terms of like prognostications. That's when he says the really sticky stuff, I feel like. And I mean, basically he called the Endeavor sale. We were on stage the night before it was announced in LA. And the next morning we wake up and Vince is with his mustache on MSNBC or whatever it was, CNBC with Ari, talking about the sale the night before, the last thing Lapsed Vince said to the assembled crowd at that comedy club in LA was, "You will wish me well in my future endeavor."
Amazing. Amazing. Now, so,
but listen closely and ignore at your peril.
Yes.
Are there any impressions, potential characters, you know, I mean, the TKO leadership is so, you know, so interesting, right? Honestly, I was trying to think, is there anyone you could impersonate there that would, they don't have the character yet, but you know.
Oh, that'll come. Although one particular board member has made his way. We actually got a cameo request a couple months ago saying, can you please like recreate? It's the things that we get on the requests we get on Cameo are sometimes so ridiculous. And they said, can you please recreate what it was like on The Rock's first board meeting? And I was like, what are you talking? I mean, we do a barely Rock impression. And it's like, it's barely there. It's all it is. Usually it's whoa, 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 whoa. Like, that's it. That's where I end it. And so I was like, what are you doing asking this? I had no idea. And then, you know, it just happened. And we had I created a board meeting where The Rock announced not only is he on the board, but he's the director of the board. He's the head. And
that'll happen eventually too.
Yeah, and it will happen. Yeah. I guarantee you it will happen.
And Lapsed Vince said we do a segment called This American Work, where we go through Vince's entire biography and sort of revisit, you know, the moments along the way where people, you know, suddenly disappeared and Vince knows nothing about it, but it certainly furthered his prospects as the years turned. And I think of the announcer at Madison Square Garden, the ring announcer, who as soon as he dropped dead, there was Vince ring announcing at MSG. I think about Dr. Jerry Graham, who knew more about Vince going back to Fishburne Military Academy than just about anybody else, who got fucking waylaid and killed in a pedestrian accident. And as we go through all this, we, you know, we get to the point where we're talking about, you know, the resignations and sort of the board shakeup. And, you know, December 27th of last year, he was on there saying, there will be a reckoning. This is my company. I will return. There are a lot of secrets in these halls that will come out. I'm not the only one with secrets, folks. And kind of happening, kind of happened. And where all of a sudden everyone's got dirt on their hands. And you kind of realize that no one's clean in this situation because it's pro wrestling. And it's kind of disturbing and weird. It gets really weird really quick when you really look at it chronologically in terms of how it all played out. But hey, you know, what we are, Josh, is a large language model, okay? You feed us the corpus of data about a wrestler and his background and history, and we will spit out, we will inference for you, based on your query, what that person is likely to think and say in a given scenario. But we're not, to JP's point, trying to repeat or revisit things they've said and trying to nail it like verisimilitude. We're more processing it through the engine of what we think is the essence of this person and then spitting out custom content for your marketing needs.
That whole paragraph would be great on a t-shirt, just from start to finish.
You know, we can work on it. We've got a lot of t-shirts at the Pro Wrestling Tees store.
Yes, that's, you right. Do.
There are a lot of tees there.
Yes, you do.
There's a couple for Philly coming up. You know, I think we are a large language model. Might be a good t-shirt, boss. You might want to consider that.
I think so. Laps fan, a large language model.
So I want to ask about last year's show, because obviously it was the first one you kind of have done like this. What did you learn coming out of it? Because going into it, I remember you talking about, you kind of have an idea, but you have no idea. What did you learn coming out of it? And did you make any adjustments for this year's show?
Interesting. I don't know, JP, you want to take that one first? I'll think about it.
Sure. I will say, and this was funny. This was very funny to Jack last year, but I'm an actor. I've done a lot of stage work. I've been in front of audiences before, large audiences, way larger than what we had for sure. And I was petrified. Oh. I was absolutely petrified. I was so, you know, it's honestly, I think a part of that there's kind of a thing where I can go up there and be a character and be fine and whatever, but going up there and being myself, no, I can't do that. Like that's terrifying. So I was very, very nervous going up there, and then I realized it's a real, yes, it's our first time going up there in this kind of situation, but we're going up there with a room full of friends. It's people who are diehard supporters of the show. These are people who have been with us day one, who have said that they have eliminated all other podcasts in their queue because we pretty much forced them to, because we take up so much time. But also, for a number of things. And so when we get up there, it's like it's more comfortable than anything. And for me, that was, on my personal ego trip on that regard, like that was kind of the thing that I'm not worried about this year. It's like I know these people are up there. I know that when we're up there and Jack and I are connected up there, we'll be fine. And we can take care of each other up there. No different than a wrestling match in many ways. And honestly, I just there's it's just fun. I mean, I would say also the way it was kind of just thrown together and improvised last year, just it worked. And it's fun that way, kind of not knowing. We have like a good wrestling match. We kind of know we have highs and lows where we're going, but we'll make it up. We'll call it in the ring. Call it on
Yeah,
the
very
stage.
much so. Yeah, it's a live podcast. It's give and take. It's feeding off energy. It's not like here up comes the curtain and here's our first song and dance routine. There might be a little bit of that, but it's not like, an actor like JP is accustomed to, where like he's coming in wearing a totally different skin, and it's like, okay, this is who I have to be to deliver this performance. Whereas here, there's no such thing as preparing that way because it's you. You're the one that's up there, and you're the one that they came to see, and you're the one that they want to hear talk. And it's just, we're sitting down. We're not. We're not parading around. We're chilling, and you're chilling with us. It's just like being in the room while we record a show, except there's all this extra energy and excitement. It's great. I mean, I've seen other podcasts do stuff like this, and it's, Dave and Brian do it too. I mean, they do sort of like a Q&A format, whereas we sort of do like a give and take on stage with our friends kind of thing, and you can bear witness. But plenty of interaction too. I mean, if you scream something from the audience, we're going to hear it. And we heard plenty of things last year. I still remember, and I wish I knew which member of the solar system it was, which, for those who don't know, is what we call our fan base. When Lapsed Vince was up there going on his rant about the future of the WWE, and he said something to the effect of, "And I'm proud to sit here before you tonight and say that when all is said and done, I'm proud to say my daughter will end up with none of my company." And someone in the audience went, "Yeah," when he said that. And I don't know what itch that scratched for that individual, but that's the moment I'm talking about.
Yep. That's always the good stuff.
So you mentioned earlier, this is year 10
Yes.
of Lapsed Vince. TLFX, bitch.
That is that's crazy. That's hard to believe.
It
Just
was
like
really
that.
amazing when some of the listeners, we've been doing like testimonials every week on our feed where people send in little, audio messages about what the show has meant to them and why they care so much. And someone said, "I spent my whole 30s with you." That's fucking weird. That's really weird. Like to think that our warped way of looking at things colored the way they saw the world for 30 years, or for 10 years rather, their entire 30s, very formative years, as anybody knows, that's been through it, is a trip. And yeah, you just keep going. I mean, you have to tell us it's 10 years. It's not like we realized it.
Yeah, we've always been the worst at celebrating anniversaries. In that regard, like people often tell us, like, "Hey guys, it's like, it's been like I remember our fifth anniversary. It's like it's been 5 years." I'm like, "Oh, has it? Like, oh, I guess we should have done something."
I got this uncensored show to watch.
Yeah,
I
I
don't
know,
know
right?
about that.
Exactly. And but with the 10th, it was like, we really wanted it to be something, because it's amazing. It's really crazy, like I mean, to be able to feel, to be able to be that needed for people, or at least to help, people escape, not to get too deep on it, but to help people, kind of, because that's honestly what it's more of that. And then anything is hearing people talk about how we get them through this, we get them through that. We have long commutes for people and da da da. We get every time we drop an episode, oh my God, did you guys even know I was going on this 8-hour flight today and you guys dropped an episode? Like, that's amazing. Like, oh God. You know, it's that kind of stuff that that keeps you going, and there's never been, I would say, I can't think of there ever being a real lack of interest on our part to, like, not do it. It's also just fun that we get to, and honestly, and on the sidelines, it's made us closer too, as friends. Like,
Absolutely.
we talk multiple times every week, which before the show, well, yeah, we talked fairly often, but it was like maybe once a month,
For like
something like
4 hours,
that. Yeah, but like for like 4 hours.
which is how we knew that this would
Yeah.
work. But that's such a good point too. Absolutely. People need to know that have listened to the show and then kind of get what this is, even if you don't listen to us. Like, that's the kind of thing that can happen when everyone kind of agrees. Yeah, you guys really should make you really should make a podcast about your fucking interpersonal dynamic, You really should make it a podcast. We'd be watching these old shows anyway. We'd be making these comments anyway. We'd be exchanging text messages anyway. And so I think people feel that. I mean, I don't know. When people say that, life is pain, right? Okay. Life is pain. Life is defined in the
Brother.
moments where we're uncomfortable and we wouldn't rather be doing, but by virtue of the fact that we have to do it, it tells you something, that we wouldn't choose to do it yet. Here we are stuck having to do it. That means it's important. And so those are the moments of drudgery we talk about where we can be in your ear. And we can help you get through the shift. We can help you get through the dishes, get through mowing the lawn, get through the crying baby, get through the commute, like you said, get through even, some deeper, darker moments. Plenty of people have talked to us about how they kept us on loop when they were going through difficult personal times. But it's not just that. It's not just people who are going through tough stuff. It's people who are just going through the drudgery that is life, that you can't live a meaningful life without doing these things. Yet who the fuck wants to just shut out everything else they could be doing that stimulates their mind while they're doing this rote task? A branch fell in my yard. I took a handsaw to it and I cut it into 150 pieces or whatever it was. And because I had a podcast in my ear, it flew by. Before podcasts and audiobooks and the like, I would have been a fucking, I would have been, you wouldn't want to talk to me for a month after I went through that because I would have been so miserable with that physical labor. And that's what's up. That's what we're here for. We're here for those moments. And, not everybody has those kind of huge gaping spots in their day, and not everyone can handle the length and the girth of our episodes, and I understand that. But at the same time, you got to realize the only people we can afford to care about are the people who do have that kind of time, because they're the ones who actually pay. They're the ones who actually make it a going concern, because you can't do this forever without seeing some recompense. You can't do this forever without seeing some return on your time spent, because then it does become a dereliction of your domestic duty, right? To spend this much
Oh
time.
God, seriously. I mean, it's hours and hours and weeks and weeks.
Do you two ever run into creative burnout, or in doing this, or has there been a time where you're like, that one, what one, that episode really wasn't that great, or you didn't feel good about it, or the topics, or, you know what I mean? Has that ever happened to you guys in 10 years?
No, but I will say sometimes we find ourselves stuck doing something for 6 more weeks than we thought it would take.
That's for sure.
We
Like
just
what?
finished a tribute to Terry Funk. When he died, we said, all right, clear the decks. We're going to do the definitive audio tribute to this man because he is the greatest professional wrestler of all time. And we're going to tell you precisely why, beat by beat, territory by territory, year by year, epic by epic, Japan NWA champion, Flair feud, Dusty feud, Jerry Lawler feud, Hogan WWF, ECW, the post ECW years, beyond the mat, over the top, all the things that made him unique. The whole story of the double cross, the whole story of,
We didn't do over the top. We did Roadhouse.
oh, that's right. Well, we were over the top the whole time. We
That's
had
true.
done Rocky III. We had done Paradise Alley. In Rocky III, he factors in it as much as, he supposedly made the connection to get Hulk Hogan on the set. But that was one where it was like, we know what we have to do. We know the boxes we have to check. But the episodes ended up being like 3 hours longer than we thought to get through the periods of Terry Funk's life and career and contributions. It was just because we go in like, fuck it. We go as long as it takes because we know our audience is there for as long as it takes.
I mean,
That's our tailwind.
to me, that's the classic example too, is it was doing WCCW, doing the world class stuff, because it was something that we were like, okay, we'll do each week will be 1 year, da 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 da. And then it was like, well, no, I used to hate, the day before we'd record, because I'm someone who likes to, I like to get as much done as possible in terms of viewing, in terms of watching and stuff, just to kind of like make sure that I'm prepared and can move on. But it was like if the day before, no, we gotta, I gotta, I'm calling an audible. We gotta do this. And everyone's like, motherfucker.
Yes.
And it's like having to watch more. But it's like, but there's a good reason to it because it does make it that it the stuff is that much more important. But also, when we're talking about, we did 6 months on world class easily, 6 months
We did 6 months of Vince McMahon's trial. We did 6 months of Hulk Hogan and TNA. We called it TNH, Total Nonstop Hogan, and it was total and it was nonstop.
Yes, it was.
And all the absurdities about Hogan, the wrestling business, and us as wrestling fans that Hogan's TNA run elucidates, and all of the bullshit that that run puts into clear, relief in terms of who is and isn't actually creative in this business, and who actually isn't capable, and who is and isn't capable of turning business around without the precise set of circumstances that they had in the past. And so, yeah, when we're in the throes of that, it can feel like, not the creative well is running dry, but it can feel like it's never going to end. We're never going to get to the other side. And every time we do, and those last episodes always feel so liberating, but and so complete, because we know we've done the work to say what needs to be said about the subject. Because if we can't put it on the shelf after we're done and say, that's all anyone needs to know about that subject, we haven't done our job. We haven't lived up to what people support us for.
And for me, in terms of burnout, I'll say the only times I also this too, just by chance, and usually the universe provides for us in this regard, is that there'll be a time where it's like we can't do a show 1 week because I'm out of town, or I have a commitment that I can't break, or Jack's out of town, or it's a holiday, or something like that. And so we do get this period of time where it's like, okay, great, we can actually chill, or at least, stretch things out. Because for me, I know I do on our Patreon paywall, we do another show, Under the Cinemat, which is strictly, it's about movies that have a wrestling connection, a pretty solid, needs to be a pretty solid wrestling connection. But and I do the research part on that, and I say it all the time, and I don't know how Jack does it in the amount of it's exhausting to me to go through all the stuff that and try to emulate what he does and really bring a lot of research. So yeah, there are definitely times where I'm like, oh my God, I need a break. And it's and you know it happens. Like we can, like, we're fortunate in that regard that yes, there are definitely a few a good chunk of listeners who are able to really keep up week to week, but there are also, I'd say, the majority are several weeks behind. So if we took a week off, 2 weeks off, they're just catching up, and they've got, they might not even fully catch up to the to the present. So it all kind of comes out in the wash. Like I the if you will, burnout, or at least the exhaustion, kind of gets taken care of in itself each year,
Yeah, but again, organic
naturally.
breaks. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons we go so hard, is because we know that there's that lever we can pull if we need it, and our fans are forgiving of that. I mean, they better be. I mean, if they got a problem when we take a break, they can go fuck themselves. They can jump off a fucking bridge, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, the I think one of the really, when you know you're doing a good job, is when you put out a 4 hour episode and people are saying, are you kidding me? It's only 4 hours. And
We're
they're
going
being
through that.
serious.
This is an opportunity to mention this, JP. We're collaborating with Dark Side of the Ring on their podcast series, which accompanies season 5. It's called Unheard, so you can check that out on all your major podcast players. And we do a similar lapse treatment. They brought it to the table because they know the truth. They know that they've got this corpus of incredible interviews they've done, and all this unused insight and sound bites from these luminaries in the business over the years. And we'll do what we do. We'll put them under the microscope. We'll find the little nuggets that no one's quite heard that way before, that people really need to, really need to understand about these subjects. and we do it one at a time. You know, we did an episode on Animal. We did an episode on Marty Jannetty. Well, that's still to come. Hasn't been released yet. An episode on New Jack. Did an interview with an episode on all these guys they've sat with and the unused stuff and gone through all the transcripts and isolated them. And we sit down with Evan Husney, the co-producer, and we talk about, you know, what it was like putting the show together and some other folks that work for Dark Side and put shows together as well and sat for interviews and conducted interviews with these guys. And, and to the point, it's like, it feels weird to put out a 47-minute episode or an hour, 1-minute episode. It's like, we're just getting started. So we understand. It's not that we can't.
Right. We only, you know, with each episode, it's like, what, we get to kind of listen and talk about what, three to four clips of maybe a 4-hour interview. And it's like, you know, if we could be just having that whole 4-hour interview going at the same time, we'd be commenting on it long.
Yeah, it would be 3-4-hour parts. Absolutely. Yeah. It's so true. But that's been a great exercise because it's like, you know, there's a lot of discipline there. It kind of makes us stick to our guns. And it's much more of like an orchestration, you know, we're like making a conversation happen instead of just bullshitting between each other. But, you know, if we didn't start out bullshitting between each other and hitting record 10 years ago, Dark Side wouldn't be interested. We wouldn't be talking to you. And Punchline Philly wouldn't be teeming with crazy motherfuckers on April the 7th.
That's right. Before we get to kind of get to the end here, I do have a question. Hulk Hogan, has any, and I might have asked this last year, but I'll ask it again. Has any of the phrases and kind of just the reverence you've had for Terry got back to him in terms of certain catchphrases that are on the show, of course you see on your Twitter account and so on and so forth. What, like, I'm the last I'm gonna guess there is, so let me have it.
I will confess that one of my favorite parts of doing the show is being able to detect when people listen and pretend they don't. We know you're listening in every case.
That's right.
And this goes for everyone in the business. Some of them step forward. Some of them aren't afraid to follow and like and retweet and subscribe. But we have it on good authority that the lapsed fan travels in the business. The name reverberates. Now, what people feel about it is a different question.
Of course.
I remember when Conrad brought it up on a Bruce Pritchard show, and Bruce immediately went, yeah, well, fuck him. So he thinks the lapsed fan is probably just JP because he probably called him like a fat bitch or something.
Right.
But that's kind of like, you know, so it's hard to tell the difference. Yeah. Yeah. But Hogan's definitely one, you know, he used to read the Observer obsessively. Look at Ric Flair's book. He said, you know, he was obsessed with the Observer, obsessed. And do you think Hulk Hogan would ever admit to reading the Observer if you met him? Of course not.
No.
That's wrestling. And that's how people in the business are.
I'm hoping that I don't know if we've gotten a tweet at least about this or not. I don't know if anyone's done this, but we have a shirt on Pro Wrestling Tees that's in the design of Hulk rules, but it says what is it? Section 11, subparagraph E.
That's the part of his contract that gives him creative control over the finishes.
Over the finishes. And so
when we did our Bash at the Beach 2000 series, we went deep on the contract and the court filings too.
Yep. Section 11, subparagraph E. And I just want a picture with someone wearing that shirt with Hulk Hogan. I think that would just be amazing to me.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if he'd get it. I don't know. It's pretty,
I know. Might not.
Pretty arcane to know that actual paragraph, chapter, and verse. But we've sold a lot of those. We see people wear those to like AEW shows and things. They send us pictures.
Yeah.
It's it really is something else. And, you know, the Bash at the Beach 2000 coverage that we did and pulling court files from, you know, Atlanta courtrooms and trying to answer all the questions about that whole thing as far as what people were willing to stipulate to under deposition and things like that. You know, we came around and Dark Side was doing their Bash at the Beach show 2000. They were like, we need that taste. We need the TLF jumpstart, just like they did on the Vince McMahon trial episode, just like they did for the entire Tales from the Territory series. We're operating just under the surface in this business in a way where we're trusted to deliver the, not just the truth in terms of like the black and white of the truth, but also the spiritual truth of the imitations and the essence of people.
Yep.
And that's something, you know, I think people pretend not to notice, but they know.
When you were talking about Hulk reading the Observer, I just had an image of him using readers to read the small type in the Observer. You know what I mean? Does he have special pair of spectacles? Not because he doesn't have a prescription, brother, but he has to put on the cheaters. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. Have we had fun with that over the years? The idea that he's reading the Observer in the closet.
We had We used to make a joke too in college that Hulk Hogan was writing the Observer as well. Like he'd like be in a closet, like he and Linda would go to bed and like he'd wait for her to fall asleep and then he'd just go in the closet and he'd have a typewriter and like, oh, man, he's typing away, brother.
Fujinami's work rate is slipping, brother. It's yeah, we go to the absurd lengths. Just 2 weeks ago we did a show on Royal Rumble 2008, and of course Dylan Postel, Hornswoggle, factors strongly into that episode because the Vince Bastard Son stuff was going on. And we were like, hey, remember when we met Hornswoggle at somewhere? We didn't remember. And one of our listeners was with us. We totally forgot he was with us. Sent us pictures of us with Dave was there, Brian was there, and Hornswoggle is there. And it's as absurd as it sounds. And we just paid tribute to, people should know, to Virgil. And the reason we paid tribute to Virgil is A, because he accepted our money to come to JP's bachelor party in 2012 and stand there. And he didn't stand there, he did, and asked for meat sauce, he did, well before anybody associated him with meat sauce. This is before a lonely Virgil.
Well before he was a social media meme there. Well before he was
So we
doing that at my
revisited
bachelor party.
that night. Turned out one of our buddies had it on tape. We didn't even remember that.
No,
Yeah,
I didn't have it.
the whole like, because we did like a Q&A with him. We didn't know what else to do. It was in like a cigar bar in Boston. He just like walked in. It was hilarious.
I gotta tell you, as I said, it's one of the most horrifying. It was this amazing experience because I'm sitting there and I said, I'd really like to have a roast done. Like, I'd love for people to roast me during the thing. I was like, okay, great. And so I'm sitting there and then all of a sudden I notice Jack's gone. I'm like, where the hell did Jack go? Like, he just went to sleep. And I really thought, because back in the day when we were in college, Jack would dress like we a stupid college TV show, and we would dress up as Hogan and Vince, and he would be Vince Bobby Hogan. All right, and so I thought he was gonna get the mask and get all dressed up,
And be Vince, yeah.
and be Vince and roast me as Vince, and then all of a sudden he comes out and he does the whole Arn Anderson,
What a goof! What a goof!
Return of Ric Flair in 98, bit, and it's. And he brings out Virgil, and my first reaction is, oh my God, this is amazing, because we kind of made a running joke of ourselves of actually hiring a wrestler for like some a wrestler on the level of Virgil, who to not do anything extraordinary, literally just to be there to be a guest somewhere, just to kind of like just come to a party. Like we used to joke, our friend Tim, we'd hire Virgil just to be a guest at his party. Like just to spend the money, just to have him be there and just be a guest. You don't have to perform, not to do anything. Just sit there and mingle with people he doesn't know and eat food. And so, because and so th this happened, and I immediately start laughing, and I'm like, oh my God, this is hilarious. And then I'm like, okay, all right, it's pretty cool. And then I start to get nervous because I'm like, well, wait a minute, what? Like, there's only me and Jack and Tim and our friend Bill who know who he is at my bachelor party. There are like 7/8 of the people at my bachelor party have no idea who he is. And so I'm like, okay. And I get nervous and then I get scared. And then I'm like, shit, I gotta sober up. So I immediately like just kind of, oh, all right, we gotta work now. We gotta get into work mode. And we start doing a Q&A thing, which was an absolute riot. And it made the whole thing work. And everyone who was there loved him. So, wild.
So we do that, and we're at the very least, we got to pay tribute to the guy because he did this thing for us, and it's a great story. So we called together all the guys again in a Zoom call, and we revisited the day. We called JP's dad, who helped, let's say, put the financing together, and was fucking hilarious, recollecting JP's
Oh
wrestling
yeah.
fandom and stuff.
My God.
And then we said, well, we got to do a trip. We got to look at the guy's life and times. We got to look at why, for some reason, there's this discrepancy about his date of birth. Why is it that Virgil didn't want people to think that he was 30 in 1981? And so we did what we did, and we do what we do. And by the time it was over, we discovered what I don't think anybody else knew about Virgil, that he did time on a DEA heroin bust when he was coming up in the world as a semi-pro football player, a part of his life he never talks about. You didn't hear any Virgil obits talking about how he actually made the Kansas City Chiefs for a heartbeat. And he actually had a very successful football career. The reason you don't know that, I think, and we're willing to surmise, is because if you search Michael Charles Jones and football player, you're going to come across this DEA bust from 1981. And it totally lines up. But if you think he's 10 years younger than he is, you wouldn't think that's the Mike Jones that we knew as Virgil.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing, like, you put a subject matter in our hands and we're going to find it.
Yep.
Whatever it is, we're going to find it.
And it's going to hurt.
That's right. So just to kind of catch up on this aspect as well, JP is still lapsed when it comes to current day wrestling. Is that
the only thing that I watch regularly is we do a live, a monthly, we call premium live call of whatever pay-per-view WWE is doing. We do our premium live call and that's it. I often come into those monthly shows having no clue what the matches are. And I read about stuff, you know, I read updates, I read little things here and there and stuff. But in terms of the actual, like, I know nothing. I don't know. And the things that I miss for some reason are always what matches are being set up. Because I go into most things, most pay-per-views or most PLEs not having any clue and wondering why.
I always say JP is like the only lapsed fan in captivity that I know of. Where like he's lapsed enough that he doesn't follow the week to week, but he also has a podcast about wrestling. And so is like kind of forced to get exposed in kind of a controlled release way. And we call it the Boss Index. I call him the boss, have for years, way before the show started.
Yeah.
And the Boss Index is if JP sees money in a guy having no week to week bias, having watched everything religiously, I swear to God, it's like a 90% hit rate. The guy goes on, MJF called it right away. Not to say nobody knew about MJF, but if you go to our, we did a recording in the crowd at All In 2018, sitting there watching, and he's going nuts about MJF. Never saw him before. No clue. Hadn't heard him talk, nothing. Of course, a year later, Kenta Kobashi is chopping JP at StarCast 2.
I just watched that today.
With MJF in the background, smiling and recording the thing on his cell phone. There's another... We love Max, but I'm sure he would, you know, say he doesn't know the show too, even though he sat there and recorded the whole thing. But it's that kind of like thing keeps coming back. Like Joe's on top in AEW.
I've always been a fan of Joe.
Boss like Joe, it's always going to come back to Joe. He's the money. You saw him in Ring of Honor in 2003, whatever it was.
Yep.
It's coming back to Joe every time. It's like, it's pretty fun because, you know, it's pretty fascinating even because when you're steeped week to week, you have all these little storylines, all these little twists and turns you have in your mind, these little turns of phrases they used in a promo, this little rumor that leaked on Twitter that characterizes the person in a way that the cold viewer wouldn't appreciate or even know about. And there's just the essence of the person that you kind of lose sight of when you get all this inside information about the person or the character or the wrestler. And he doesn't have that problem yet. He's not so lapsed that no one can benefit from his insight, or he's not so lapsed that he wouldn't go to WrestleMania. We're going for two nights and he doesn't watch the TV. So,
right.
You know, everyone talks about the casual fan and all this bullshit. Like, yeah, you'll never get the casuals. Dur, dur, dur. It's like, you don't know anybody.
Yeah.
That's a barometer for that. Everybody you know, like, thinks you're basically that you have a developmental disability. And that's why you watch wrestling.
Because, you know, the thing is, too, regarding, number one, that is true. You do, yeah. Everyone, if you watch wrestling and someone knows about it, they think less of you immediately.
Yeah, well, at the very least, you become the wrestling guy. They never forget that about you.
Right.
Like, for a reason.
You could win a Nobel Prize.
That's right.
Okay? You could win a Nobel Prize for world peace. And if people find out that you're a wrestling fan, they're like, oh, yeah, the wrestling guy. What an idiot.
Hey, is Hulk Hogan still wrestling?
Yeah. You still watch Hulk Hogan? You watch that WrestleMania stuff?
Oh, yes. My grandfather used to watch Haystacks Calhoun. And what was the guy's name? The Polish one?
Is that Kelly Kowalski? You know, the thing regarding me, I don't watch week to week. I haven't watched week to week in, I'm going to say, 13 years. Definitely not. At least 13 years. And the sad thing and kind of the thing that like what we're talking about is I want to find somebody that I can root, that I can get behind, that I will want to watch week to week, that I'm like, you know what? I can watch this guy. AEW was there at first. I was like ready to watch AEW week to week. And then, and
look at the charts in terms of viewership and ticket sales.
Yeah.
As his interest wanes, so does the business indicators. Yeah. And, He's a leading indicator. And
I indicate. And
sure enough, like, I'm like, this is a big deal. Yeah. Like, does JP know about it? And if he does, the numbers are there. And if he doesn't, oh, I thought it was a big deal because I'm in the bubble and I was wrong.
Yeah, and yeah, like regarding like Joe, MJF, MJF too. I definitely will take credit for the MJF thing. I'll go because I was like, I'll never forget
Because he doesn't know. I'm sorry, this electrifies me as a conversation just quickly. Because he doesn't know that people see that in MJF. He has no fucking idea. So you can't accuse him of cheating, and bandwagon jumping. He has no clue.
I had no idea what MJF was in 2018. I went to All In. The only reason I went to All In was because we were invited to StarCast and we were able to negotiate tickets. That's it. Like, that's it. I had no, I'm like, I don't, whatever. Great. Oh, Cody can do 10,000 people in a stadium. Ooh. And it's like my mom can do that. And
Let's not get on that one.
right. So I was like, I'm just going. It was fun. Obviously, you see the legends there. Never forget Animal walking around in full makeup everywhere he went in that hotel.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace, indeed. And so we go there, we go to the show, and there's this MJF character. And I'm like, oh, he's pretty cool. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. He's really good because he's like, he just never broke character. He didn't have an excellent match, but he was the one person that stood out to me the entire show because I'm like, this guy gets it. This guy rocks. He's so committed. He's not gonna. And then Jack told me, yeah, he doesn't break kayfabe for anybody. I'm like, that's amazing. After the show, he told me that. And so it was thrilling. And I loved watching him. He was the highlight. He like opened the show, I think, was like the first match of
The
that
second
show.
match, I think, yeah,
First or second
second
match.
match.
He was the best. He was the highlight for me. Didn't we have wasn't what's his name? Okanita. What's his name?
Okada?
Okada, wasn't he there for that one?
Oh yeah, he had a wonderful match with Marty Scurll.
Yeah,
They
no.
went so long that the main event with Ray and it had to get truncated. Remember, it was like a mad
That's
dash
right.
of.
No, I don't remember any of that. I remember MJF.
That's what I mean. We went to the New Japan ROH sellout at MSG, a building where JP worked for years as a tour guide, as a matter of fact. So he's got an extra personal connection place. We're up in the balcony. It was sold out, of course, as anyone remembers. Obushi and Naito are in the ring doing state-of-the-art things. Incredible. And I look over to my right, and he is out cold in the seats. Out cold. You've never seen someone give less of a fuck about Kota Ibushi than he did. And it's just, I can't be mad at it. I can't be mad at it because it's so much closer to the this mythical casual fan we talk about. Yet why would you ever have a casual fan in the crowd at a New Japan show in New York City? You wouldn't, right? So that's the unique vantage point. But it's all to say that we walk the walk. That's right.
What about you, Jack? What are you watching?
I'm watching everything. I'm watching.
Yeah.
Crazy
Yeah,
how
I
much.
watch. It's my whole life. In terms of like, it's a lifetime of habitual wrestling watching. It's just like an itch I have to scratch, and I watch much more binge fashion than I used to because we grow up, hopefully, and don't have as much time. We don't, even though we've built a business around it, it's not such that I can just tell myself it's my job to watch wrestling. So I watch in bursts. Like I'll go nuts. If I have like around the holidays, I'll go nuts and catch up on like Impact and some New Japan and stuff. I'll catch up to the degree I can on like MLW and like smaller groups that might get TV. I just the DVR. The DVR is working on my behalf at all times, and it's a question of when I can sit down with it. And before we do our monthly live calls on WWE shows, I'll make sure to get totally up to date. I'm usually pretty good on that, but
Wild.
you become an expert as the years go at watching wrestling shows quick. It's like, okay, this is stuff that they do every single week. We can skip this. This is just filling time. You can tell, right? And you know when to stop and pay close attention because this is the thing that people are going to remember the show for if they remember it for anything in 2 months or 6 months. I mean, we've done, how many episodes of hours and hours and hours and hours, and still people tell us, remember when you said that and watched that show? I'm like, we did that show? So it doesn't matter how much attention you pay.
Right.
It's just whether it's really good or not. That's the only thing you're going to remember. Or if it's really, really bad, I mean, you can remember that too, but
I didn't even think to ask you if you were going to be in Boston last week for big business.
no, we didn't go. We went to the Blood and Gut show the year before at the Garden because we did a war game series where we looked at every war games match in chronological order, and so we felt obliged to check that out and add it to the the history of it. But no, I wasn't compelled. to go, and he wasn't compelled to go. I didn't hear anything from him about it.
What are you talking about?
Exactly. And what did the ratings show? I mean, I love Sasha, but you know what I mean? It didn't reverberate beyond the bubble. And you can't tell when you're in the bubble. You just can't. It's nothing wrong with it. It's not a critique. It's not shit talking to say that. It's just fact. We know this from MMA, right, Josh? It's like when Conor's fighting, oh my God. It's actually a good thing that I'm an MMA fan. You know, people in my orbit want to talk to me about the fight.
Right.
And they never
right.
mention a fight 18 months out of the, you know, in the next 18 months, they're not going to say a single thing, but Floyd's fighting. They're plugged in. I remember Floyd De La Hoya was like, this is going to be fucking huge business because people in my life that never care about boxing are back. Mm-hmm. They want to know. And I'm of service in that instance. And that's what Laps Van is. It's like, you know, remembering in the Attitude Era being in high school and all of a sudden the fact that you like wrestling wasn't something you had to sort of hide. People right. were like, what's Stone Cold doing? Like the cool kids wanted to know about it. It only lasted right. 2 years, but it was a wonderful 2 years.
I remember I was writing a column for my college newspaper at the point yeah. about wrestling. And it felt fine to do that. It was like yep. sunlight, you know?
Well, that was always a great thing. I always get a kick out of it when we were in college and Jack would always sneak in some kind of a wrestling or an MMA article in the papers that he was interning at and stuff like that. Always like some weird little thing every now and again. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I got to interview John Cena in 2003 right. Because he's from Boston. And I was working at the paper there. And all those little things along the way. You know, got to interview Connor one time for like 45 minutes when I was at the, before they came in for the Seaver fight to Boston.
Oh, yeah.
So you get the chance, you know, to actually see these guys in the flesh and interact with them. And that helps too with your perspective. But yeah, man, you're exactly right. All of a sudden, it's okay to write this column. Mm-hmm. And in 2 years, everyone's like, why would we ever publish that? But
yeah, I am definitely a lapsed MMA fan for sure. It's so hard to follow it now. And just, you know, I'm kids and like main event starting at 1 a.m. It's like impossible to do, but yet the sport is like more money than ever and seems harder than ever. But it's nothing will touch the era of the Connors, the Brocks, the Rondas, less shows and everything feeling bigger because there was just less of it to me.
Yep. Less of it. Yeah. Less of it. And you know, once in a lifetime sure. personalities.
Yeah.
Connor and Ronda was Rock and Austin on the same roster mm-hmm. at the same time. Yep. Those should be two totally different eras. You're not supposed to get people of that star wattage at the same time, but sometimes it does happen. And I saw you at the Weidman Gastelum fight, wasn't it? In Boston?
Yes.
And that was like, I couldn't believe how much tickets were. I was like, holy shit, because I wasn't covering it. It was one of the only UFCs I've ever gone to where I paid because I wasn't covering. And I was like, oh my God, what happened? These tickets turned out that the move was made in COVID where they just didn't stop. And I think they seeded a whole new generation of consumers that don't care about wrestling. They don't give a fuck about any of this stuff. They just care about MMA is cool. You know, these kids were probably 10 when we were watching GSP
yeah.
and we were, you know, watching Chuck mm-hmm. and now here they are filling these buildings. We're like, no one talks about MMA. No, wrestling people don't talk about MMA anymore.
Right.
And that was inevitable because MMA was better at wrestling than wrestling was for about 10 yep. years. And now it's just, now they're just they're like every other sport. I mean, they're literally on ESPN. Like yeah. there's no like, you know, fringe sport factor to it anymore. And so that was part of, I think, what appealed to wrestling fans, but that's that.
So before I let you go, I got to ask about I didn't bring it up at the beginning, the Terry Funk branding iron.
I thought you'd never ask and go ahead and stick it up your ass.
I went ahead and got myself a branding iron. Didn't know what for, didn't know what I'm going to brand, but I said, might as well have it and see where we go with it.
Everyone does a Terry Funk imitation, but very few have ever noticed that he always says, I went ahead. I went ahead. I fell ahead. I got some head.
So at the event coming up in Philadelphia, you'll be raffling off an authentic Terry Funk branding iron. It's not a work. It's a real one that you got from his estate sale. I didn't even know he had an estate sale.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's
great.
Tell the story.
So he passed away. God rest his soul. And his family just put everything in the house on, not everything, but a ton of stuff on an auction that you could see. It was mostly like local, but you could see it online and bid online. And it had a bust from the Paradise Alley movie. It had a couple of pairs of his wrestling boots. It had like vests he wore to the ring, like the leather chaps he used to wear, like the almost like those rawhide colored chaps he used to wear mm-hmm. in WWF, just hanging in his closet, like, you know, jackets he had over the years. There was a wall hanging from the ECW Hardcore Homecoming show that went head-to-head with One Night Stand in 2005 that he picked over WWE. There's all kinds of memorabilia like that. It was like, whoa, this is fucking crazy shit. So we're going through it, and there's this one lot, because what I had in mind was Lapsed Funk, which is what we called our series tribute to him. I'm like, can I find something off-brand in this lot, something that people wouldn't appreciate, that can bring us closer to Terry Funk? And there was a lot that had just a completely pointless collection of different things in it. I have two lamp posts that Terry Funk was going to put on his deck, apparently, that I'm going to give away. I don't know what to do with them. They're from like Walmart. And a paper shredder and a little like thing you put stamps in, and all this pointless shit from his house. This is not the Double Cross. He sold the Double Cross like a decade ago. This is a very nice but smaller house.
Single Cross. Single Cross Ranch.
That's the Double Cross. That's right. I went ahead and came
went
out on the deck.
One half off, and I made a single cross instead.
So I found a lot on that auction at a paper shredder. It had a bunch of VHS tapes.
Didn't have a flashlight too?
There was a big ass flashlight. I mean, a 14-inch flashlight.
Wow.
I don't know what he was doing. Probably, I'm hunting the damn coyotes. I went outside and I saw I need a flashlight, honey. Vicky, we need a flashlight.
I said, you know, Vic, I want to start going hunting in the middle of the night. I said, but I can't see. What do you think I should do?
Oh, that sounds like you need a flashlight, Terry. So yeah, there's one lot right there with all these tapes, and it's his personal collection. It's got all kinds of things he taped off. It's not a million tapes. It's like probably 12 tapes, but it's things that he cared enough to tape off of television. And wouldn't you know, it's movies. It's times TBS showed Over the Top, or they showed Paradise Alley. Or it's, you know, things like that. And it's copies he had of those VHSs and DVDs of movies that he was proud of. One of our takeaways from the Lapsed Funk was this guy actually really wanted to be a movie star. And it didn't work for him. And that's why he couldn't have allegiance to one of the big two for more than a year and a half, because he always wanted that outplan to try to take advantage of acting opportunities. And I think what he left behind might bespeak to that. So we're going through all this stuff. It's like, man, we can get those tapes. We can drop that on the listeners. Like, this is what Terry Funk cared enough to have in his collection. We did that. We isolated a promo he cut on Florida television that was... turned out to be very meaningful. And right there in the mix is what appears to be a branding iron. It's not set aside as a separate auction item. But it's there, and you can tell it's a branding iron. And I got the box at the house, and I'm opening it up, and I put this thing together. I'm like, holy shit, this is a Terry Funk branding iron. This is a fucking shoot. And he had done a video in 2020 during COVID standing in his kitchen holding it. We just retweeted it about two, three days ago, explaining what it was. It's not the one with two sets of crosses that, you know, you'll see if you Google image search Terry Funk, you know, branding iron. Not the one he used in WWF, and not the one he used in WCW during the Flair series. But it's one he used later. I think he used it in his second run in WCW in like 2000s. And we know it's authentic because of that video, not to say nothing of the fact we got it from his fucking house sent to us for a pretty penny. But I'm like, what am I going to do with this thing? You know, like, we have it. It's wonderful. But I was really out of the research materials. We got books from his house. We got, like, you know, Bret Hart's signed version of his book to Vicky. We got a Bible, where certain very poetic passages, when you consider the way his life ended, were highlighted. We got like these little notes that Vicky apparently would write in books that she was reading. It was wonderful stuff. I was so enchanted going through it all. And I had this branding arm. What are we going to do with it? Well, Philly, ECW, burning Foley, almost burning the arena down, getting sued because a fan got burned, probably with this fucking thing. We're going to give it to a member of the solar system who sees fit to join us. Steps from the ECW arena.
And here I thought we'd just start branding people in the audience with it.
That still remains a distinct possibility.
That's true. It could happen.
That's all I'm going to say about that for now.
Yeah.
But sure enough, we decided, all right, here's what we're going to do. And we'll leave you with this. If you buy a ticket to be with us on April 7th at noontime, high noon, Punchline Philly, over at their website, Punchline Philly, just Google it. And you send us proof of purchase to thelapsedfan@gmail.com, thelapsedfan@gmail.com. We will put your name into a raffle to win the Terry Funk branding iron. We're going to pull the winner on stage at the event. If you buy one of the preferred seats, the premium seats, you get two entrants into the raffle. If you buy a GA ticket, you get one. And we're really, this feels like the right thing to do in Philadelphia for Terry Funk and for our listeners. So authentic Terry Funk branding iron. It's the least we can do, and we'll be giving it away on stage April 7th.
All right. That's right. Sunday, April 7th, 12 o'clock. Punchline Philly, as you mentioned, a bunch of comics and WrestleMania talk. Bozos, Biceps, Bullshit, and Brunch, the second live endeavor of this sort for the Laps Fan. Of course, you can get the Laps Fan podcast. There's a free feed, and there's also a Patreon. And you mentioned Cameo as well. Is that is that a search for the Laps Fan? Or
yeah, you can cameo.com/lapsfan. We only on one occasion thus far have we felt the need to do a Cameo as ourselves because it was requested because I think someone was sick. Other than that, it's all done in character, and you name a character that we do, and or not even for that matter. We've done plenty that we don't know, and we give you a cameo in that regard. You know, kind of create a scene or a message in character.
And Dark Side of the Ring Unheard too.
Yes.
Check that podcast out.
That's right. And he said merch on Pro Wrestling Tees.
Oh yeah.
ProWrestlingTees.com/LapsFan.
Yeah. What other revenue streams did I not bring up that that you have?
There are many, but that'll do for now.
That'll do for now. That's right. And of course, the Terry Funk branding iron. I almost said Terry Brunch.
There we go. Yeah, we'll call it that.
Yes.
Well, maybe Terry Brunk will be there.
Good stuff. So Jack Encarnacio and JP Starr, the Laps Fan, thanks so much for stopping by. Best of luck. And yeah, we'll talk to you a year from now, I'm sure.
There's a particular podcast.
All right. Big thanks to the guys from the Laps Fan for dropping by. That was fun. I originally thought, half an hour or so, and then all of a sudden we go like overtime. No big surprise there. It's what we always do here, get into conversations, talk about different things along the way. So hopefully you enjoyed that. Check out their live show. And yeah, can't really say much more about it. Good stuff. Jack, again, if you longtime listeners will know, Jack was the very first guest on this podcast way back in August 2018. I believe all these years later, still do it. Still in thing. And one of the best vocabularies in the business. All those big words. Need a dictionary on the table. Anyway, so we had also over the weekend, Brandon Thurston and I talked about AEW business during the final quarter of 2023. Yeah, that year that just passed by. So check that as well. Got a ton of interviews in the archive, including the Fritz Von Erich interview that the guys talked about. Actually, I did not talk to Fritz Von Erich. I talked to my good friend, Holt McCallany, who played Fritz Von Erich in the, I'm going to say in the Laps Fan movie. The Laps Fan movie. Boy, we should talk about that the next time I have these guys on. But in the Iron Claw, which is available, I believe now, video on demand all over the place. And that was a great conversation. So we'll have more stuff upcoming. Got a big few weeks ahead, WrestleMania weekend, and all kinds of other stuff. So we're going to keep it going. So now you have a lot of choices in your podcast day. I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the fine podcasters here at WrestlingObserver.com and also on the Laps Fan as well. So until next time, hope your brackets aren't busted. Insert catchphrase here.